music. Good afternoon. I'm Bob Kruger with Thought for Food for January of 2022. This program is heard on the third Wednesday of the month at 4 p.m. and repeated on the third Saturday of the month at 3 p.m. It's intended for a blind and print-impaired audience, but hopefully it'll be of interest to everyone. Dates to remember in this new year begin with New Year's Day on the 1st. Epiphany, Old Christmas to many Christians, falls on the 6th. Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday is the 17th. And former President Franklin D. Roosevelt was born on the 26th. After all is gone in 2021, we all feel that 2022 has to be better. And the past year has been difficult for all of us. We've had to face problems we've never faced before, brought about by the decisions we had to make because of our responses to COVID-19. Do we get vaccinated or not? We have become a nation that can't seem to agree on the proper course and how to handle the many problems caused by the COVID pandemic. I'm no expert, but like each of us, I did what I thought was right for me and my family. You probably did the same. The new year will likely force us to make other difficult choices. So be it. Let's go on to the sort of information that we've tried to share with you in the past. An option for hot, fluffy biscuits, crispy fried chicken, and sweet southern treats is coming to Chapel Hill this year. Rise Southern Biscuits and Righteous Chicken, announced in mid-November, its first Chapel Hill store will open in March at Eastgate Crossing Shopping Center between Trader Joe's and Brugger's Bagels. It's the second new tenant announced for the shopping center, which was sold in late 2020 to new owners. Recently, a news story revealed that Shake Shack, the upscale casual burger chain, will renovate the vacant Zoe's Kitchen building. At 940 square feet, Rise won't have indoor seating or a cashier at Eastgate. Customers will order their food online or by using a kiosk at the store. They'll pick up their orders at the counter or from heated food lockers. The company launched a no-contact system last year in Carborough and Durham stores and works with third-party delivery companies such as Uber and DoorDash. That accounts for about 70% of their business, said Tom Ferguson, the Durham chef who founded Rise. We worked really hard on integrating technology into our culture, and that's working. I feel really proud of the people we have working with us, he said. Mr. Ferguson said he's not concerned about the competition from the nationally recognized Sunrise Biscuit Kitchen on East Franklin Street or from Flying Biscuit, which is coming to University Place. We got voted the best biscuit in Orange County in the Indy, that's a local newspaper, for the first time, beating Sunrise. Rise Chapel Hill will be the company's 17th U.S. location in 10 years and the 8th in the Triangle. 4 are company-owned and 4 are franchise locations, with many more pending in other states, Mr. Ferguson said. It's getting to really blow up, he said, calling the company's push to add more stores. Rise 2.0. The first iteration was me and my 25 years experience putting everything I knew into this and really chef-driven because we were making our donuts and making all of the glazes and icings and braising meats and doing all kinds of crazy stuff that didn't end up being impossible, Mr. Ferguson said. We couldn't get consistency from store to store. We couldn't get return on investment. 9 stores ended up closing. And Mr. Ferguson said he had a nervous breakdown from the stress. In rehab, I was given more love than I think I ever gave, he said. He was determined to put his company back on solid footing with the foundation of culture and love. That includes giving some of the profits back to employees through higher wages, he said, and addressing the cause of employee problems rather than reacting to the symptoms such as tardiness and sloppy work. It really works, and it's a great environment. Right now, he said, I'd like to try one of their donuts. Looking for a place to eat out After 3 decades in the restaurant business, prolific restaurateur Giorgio Bakhtassis opened his first Raleigh unit only 2 years ago. By the end of 2022, he could have 4 in the city. He announced plans in mid-December to open 2 new restaurants in Raleigh's North Hills development, joining his 2019 debut, Rosewater. The new restaurants are Giorgio Pizza Bar, a stone oven pizzeria. That will be Mr. Bakhtassis' most casual spot in his empire, which will grow to be more than a dozen concepts by the end of 2022. The other is the Spanish tapas restaurant, Las Ramblas, inspired by his time spent in Barcelona. Mr. B said construction on both residences will begin early this year. For his pizzeria, he said he wants pies that are more than consistent than the delicate doughs coming out of wood burning ovens, but not a pizza meant only for takeout. This is something you could have on a date with a full dinner experience, he said. The pizzeria will be the larger of the two, with space for 100 indoors and a small patio with room for another 25 diners. Las Ramblas will be more intimate, named for the bustling Ralamba Street in Barcelona, with spaces for 90 indoors and another 30 outdoors. Mr. Bakhtassis also has 2 other restaurants in the works, the casual Asian spot Krill in Durham and the French East End Bistro in Raleigh, both scheduled to open in 2022. In order to do all these projects, Mr. B must have very good staffs. It seems that new places to eat are springing up everywhere. In late November, Raleigh chef Scott Crawford opened the Crawford Cook Shop in Clayton, the fast-growing Johnston County town. Located at 401 Main Street in Clayton, the cook shop is Mr. Crawford's first venture into a casual restaurant with daily specials like once a week fried chicken and Friday smoked prime rib, sandwiches, snacks, and a centerpiece bar. Chef Crawford's 2 other restaurants, Crawford & Son and the French Bistro Jolie, are 2 of Raleigh's acclaimed places to eat, each helping to establish the Person Street corridor as one of the city's best districts for a night out. So it came as something of a surprise that Mr. Crawford tapped Clayton for his latest venture, looking to the up-and-coming downtown in western Johnson County for a slice of urban chic. The community has been welcoming and kind and made us feel like they truly want us here, Mr. Crawford said. They've been bending over backward to help us get open. We felt the small-town hospitality. Though through the pandemic, the impact of COVID-19 on the restaurant industry has been profound, shutting down dining rooms, changing the nature of dining out, and shifting tastes toward dishes of comfort. Mr. Crawford said his cook shop aims to build on that craving for comfort, with a menu offering familiar dishes with upscale twists led by Chef D Cuisine, Brian Slatterly. It's American food that everyone loves, but Crawford treatment from us, Mr. Crawford said in March when the Crawford Cook Shop was announced. I think people will be excited. The open menu includes snacks like boiled peanut hummus and pimento cheese, small plates of grilled oysters, pork ribs with black garlic, and beef tartare with potato chips. Look for the Crawford Cook Shop to do 3 kinds of wings with a smoked version tossed in Alabama white sauce, a familiar fried wing with fermented hot sauce, and grilled duck wings topped with hot honey and peanuts. The larger dishes include 2 kinds of cheeseburgers, a classic and a gussied-up version with sharp cheddar cheese and bacon onion marmalade. The entrees read like blue plate specials, but it's quickly clear this isn't typical diner food. The pot pie is duck instead of chicken, with root vegetables and a smoked cheddar biscuit. The meatloaf is made with venison, served with smoked potatoes and caramelized onions, and grilled carrots cooked with wood fire. I'd like to try the smoked potatoes. This new story came out in the final days of 2021. There's a kind of reincarnation that happens to the space of great bars. The names and chairs may change, The menus and beers sway this way and that, but the room stays the same. Rubles on 5 points. Durham's latest downtown bar opened in December on Main Street, in a space beloved by the city's bar crowd. It's the first two bars coming to 347 West Main Street. The second, the Remedy Room, will open earlier this year. The new bar moves into the two-story building that was once Whiskey and the most recently Citron, a popular beer and whiskey bar that closed during the pandemic. The new bars are owned by Sean Stokes, the chef and owner of Luna Rotisserie and Empedinas in Durham and Carrboro. Mr. Stokes is bringing in former Lunar manager Rob Montmayer and Anthony Koffler in the new bar project. Rubles is a small concert venue and simple bar, Mr. Stokes said, aiming for a shows of about 50 people several times a week. It first opened as a bar on December 16th, and Mr. Stokes says he plans for music will range from live bands to DJs, as well as bartenders and patrons bringing in vinyl records to play. We want this to be a place you can come to any time of the week, he said. The downstairs Remedy Room won't change that much from the dark wood and subway-filled interior of Criterion, Mr. Stokes said. He called the aesthetic late 19th century apothecary and plans to have Remedy Room open 7 days a week from 5 p.m. to 2 a.m. with a limited snack menu, classic cocktails, craft beers, and cheap beers alike. We're trying to thread the needle and be a place where everyone is comfortable ordering a well-made old-fashioned or a Pabst Blue Ribbon, Mr. Stokes said. A lot of bars can do one or the other, but not both. There's a television in Queenie's, the brand-new diner in downtown Durham, but it's a secret. Draped with a handmade quilt, the Queenie's TV will be unveiled for Monday Night Football or ACC Basketball, or next summer's World Cup, but not on the fourth hour of SportsCenter droning on and on. Queenie's joins downtown Durham as a place for all seasons, but not all at the same time. The owners, Michelle Vanderwalker, Sean Upstead, and King Kenny, expect Queenie's to match the ebbs and flows of the day. Quiet cups of coffee, busy downtown lunches, impromptu afternoon meetups, and late-night meetings. We're not going to tell you what Queenie's is, Mr. Umstead said. We're going to let you be yourself and let this be your place. While Queenie's is a sister spot to the downtown cocktail bar Kingfisher, it's also the spiritual cousin of Chili's or Applebee's or similar kinds of neighborhood grills, but tailored for downtown tastes and offices. But Queenie's is the homemade version of these restaurants, or perhaps what those restaurants aim to be, is built from scratch in just about every way that matters. Miss Vanderwalker, a potter, made every plate, bowl, and mug from about 400 pounds of clay. The owners poured the concrete bar, built the shelving, painted the walls. We really put all of those things in here, Miss Vanderwalker said. Everything has a lot of intention. The owners looked around downtown Durham and said it's hard to find the kind of a place one could visit three or four times a week. They built Queenie's to be that place. It's a reliable, delicious, everyday place, Mr. Umstead said. It's food we're proud of, and it's always there for you. Queenie's is the first and foremost a restaurant. Open from 4 p.m. to 2 a.m. Thursday through Monday. Lunch and coffee are expected in the future, with coffee served from a drive-through-like walk-up window on Main Street. The space also features a small bookstore with titles curated by Miss Vanderwalker and Mr. Kenny. There will be a no-fee podcasting studio built into a former vault. There's a lot of details to find, she said. We want it to be warm, comfortable, and familiar, like going to a friend's home. The only one item on Queenie's menu beyond $10 is a beer of French dip, combining the famous roast beef sandwich with the taco phenomenon, served here with brisket and bracing liquid on the side for dunking. The chef is Steph Bell, who ran Kingfisher's last year. Other standards include a Queenie burger, a pork chop sandwich dressed up like a banhimi, and a savage sandwich made of fried eggplant, pickled onions, cukes, tomatoes, egg, and tahini yogurt sauce. The snacks include fried croquettes of loaded baked potatoes, spear-style fried pickles, a hoop cheese plate of nachos and salads. Durham is flush with really great restaurants, Mr. Umstead said. We thought if we could make something affordable with a varied chef-driven menu, it would be a real nice fit. All this talk about tasty foods makes my mouth water. We're told that the development of newer products is often a project for a new year, such as the love-hate relationship with sugar. After decades of trying to make substitutes like Sweet and Low, Splenda, and Stevia work for consumers, the sugar alternative industry is fielding contenders with a better chance of improving one of these projects. The timing seems to be right. According to a recent survey by market research firm Euromonitor, 37% of consumers globally are looking for products with no sugar, no added sugar, or low sugar. Overconsumption of sugar has long been connected to disease. It's cited as a contributing factor to obesity, which has tripled globally since the 1970s, and cardiovascular disease, which is the leading cause of death globally. Obesity is also a factor in type 2 diabetes, which affects hundreds of millions of people around the world. In the 2021 nutrition survey on reasons to avoid sugar, more than 57% of the respondents said doing so makes them feel healthier. An equally high percentage reported it's better for me to avoid these ingredients. The coronavirus pandemic has helped accelerate this trend, as some 79% of global consumers said they're planning to eat and drink more healthy over the next year, according to a report by consumer research firm FMCG Gurus. Of these consumers, 56% plan to reduce sugar intake. In most cases, reduced sweeteners are derived from natural substances, including sugar itself, otherwise known as sucrose. In a consumer market recently focused on healthier eating, that may come in handy. The mountain, however, is high. Despite decades of medical warning, sugar is still pretty much everywhere. It's found in 60% of packaged foods sold in this country, which has one of the highest sugar intakes of any nation. One reason for this is clear to anyone who's tried traditional sugar substitutes. Few come close to matching the taste of sucrose in consumer taste tests, or have the range and formation for moisture, flavor, and texture suitable for use in packaged goods. Rabobank, another research firm, says 85% of all sweeteners are still traditional sugar. All told, it's a $100 billion market. The industry isn't concerned. But that may not be entirely the case. One industry trade group is already pushing back on how substitutes are being presented to consumers. The Sugar Association, which says it represents 142,000 growers, processors, and refiners of sugar, says it has asked the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to change label requirements to make it clearer when products containing alternative sweeteners. According to makers of sugar substitutes, Big Sugar has reason to worry. But among the would-be challengers, taste isn't the only problem to solve. Price is an issue, too. Most promising among alternative sweeteners is a rare type of sugar called allulose. First discovered in wheat in the 1940s, it's one-third less sweet than sugar, but has one-tenth the calories. In 2019, the Food and Drug Administration said allulose could be removed from the added sugar line on nutrition fact labels because, unlike sucrose, which is quickly broken down by enzymes and turned into glucose, most allulose is excreted in urine, meaning it doesn't significantly impact blood sugar levels. Another benefit is that it doesn't promote bacteria growth, which can cause cavities. Tate and Lyle, a $3 billion food and beverage ingredient supplier, makes a version of allulose that's non-GMO project verified so as to appeal to food brand marketing themselves to health and environmentally conscious consumers. The sweeteners already found in a wide range of packaged food, such as cake mixes and cookies. It's also used in candies such as Sweet Smarts, popular gummy bears, and low-carb bread sold by the Sola Company. However, the expense of production may be an obstacle to its mass adoption. Though found naturally in some plants, making allulose in bulk requires it to be produced mostly from corn in a complex chemical reaction. It's a hurdle other kinds of sweeteners must overcome as well. Another new sweetener is called Supplant. It's less sweet, according to company founder Tom Simmons. His goal isn't to replace table sugar. He wants to replace it in everyday foods. The Cambridge, England-based Supplant grinds leftover fiber from plant waste, such as corn cobs, oat fibers, and wheat bran, and then applies an enzymic process to break down into a white, dry powder. The resulting product has similarities to sucrose, but it's lower in calories and slower to raise blood sugar levels, Mr. Simmons says. Like sucrose, it includes small chains called Discardies that allow it to bake and taste like sugar. Because it is made from plant waste, it includes prebiotic fiber, which helps the blood body slow the absorption of carbohydrates. Sugar reduction in drinks was solved 40 years ago with diet soda, but for food products, it's an unsolved problem, he said. What we want to push back on is the extensive use of white refined sugar that's flooding the food system. But to do that, you need something that outperforms traditional sugar in bulk, browning, and caramelization. Chef Thomas Keller, owner of Per Se in New York City and the French Laundry in Harrodsburg, California, said he's been testing Supplant for the past year and a half. These things are very intriguing for chefs, he said. We constantly look for ways to make food more nutritious. When he first tried to entirely swap traditional sugar for Supplant, he said it was a real struggle. His test vehicle was a shortbread cookie he's been making for 27 years. The version he sells at Bouchon Bakery in Yountsville, California, uses a 50-50 blend of Supplant and sugar. Well, Mr. Keller still views it as a success. If everyone is eating half the sugar they eat today, that would change the world. Leftovers in your refrigerator, from leftovers in your lunch to planning a meal for friends and family, keeping food's important. Food poisoning, also called foodborne illness, is caused by harmful germs, such as bacteria in contaminated food. Because bacteria typically doesn't change the taste, smell, or look of food, you can't tell whether it's dangerous to eat, so in doubt, throw it out. Fortunately, proper cooking and food handling can prevent most cases of food poisoning. To practice food safety, quickly refrigerate perishable foods such as meat, poultry, fish, dairy, and eggs. Don't let food sit more than 2 hours at room temperature or more than an hour at temperatures above 90 degrees. Uncooked foods such as cold salads or sandwiches also should be eaten or refrigerated promptly. Your goal is to reduce the time of food is in the danger zone, between 40 and 140 degrees, when bacteria can quickly grow. Leftovers can be kept for 3 to 4 days in the refrigerator, but after that, the risk of food poisoning increases. You don't think you'll be able to eat leftovers within 4 days, freeze them immediately. When ready to eat leftovers, reheat them on the stove or in a conventional oven or microwave until the internal temperature reaches 165 degrees. Someone has suggested that for one meal a week, use all the leftovers, thus using these foods without having to throw them out because you're not certain as to their quality. I like that idea. Tyson Foods Incorporated says it plans to spend about $1.3 billion to automate parts of its production lines over the next 3 years. as meat packers struggle with a nationwide labor shortage that has left many processing plants understaffed. The Arkansas-based meat giant said it plans to invest more than $500 million in its fiscal 2022 year on automating some of the most labor-intensive parts of its business, including deboning chicken products. The company invested $70 million in automation in fiscal 2021. Its very simple approach here is to take away the most difficult, high-turnover jobs, Chief Executive Officer Donnie King said. Workers whose jobs are automated can be moved into other positions. Tyson, the biggest U.S. chicken producer, and other meat suppliers are under pressure to fill expanding orders from restaurants, which have been reopening pandemic-closed dining rooms. Consumers, meanwhile, continue to spend heavily at grocery stores. The company said it expects to save about $450 million by the end of 2024 fiscal year from reduced labor costs and increased production from its automation plans. Mr. King said automation will help us increase volume, improve reliability, and reduce costs over the long term. We plan to use automation to reduce the number of hard-to-fill jobs. The automation spending comes as a part of a larger program to increase Tyson's production capabilities that it hopes will save at $1 billion by the end of the 2024 fiscal year. They plan to open 12 new plants over the next 2 years, increasing its overall production capacity by about 1.3 billion pounds. Tyson spent millions of dollars over the past few years developing robotic meat processing systems aiming to automate tasks such as deboning chickens and reducing worker turnover in their plants. Deboning chicken can be labor-intensive work as workers use knives and saws on carcasses moving steadily down production lines. COVID-19 spread rapidly last year among meat plant workers, deepening the industry's long-running difficulties keeping plants fully staffed. Tyson, which produces about one-fifth of the chicken's poultry, said 15 to 20% of plant workers weren't showing up on a typical work day due to child care needs and coronavirus-related concern. Tyson's betting that robots will help them with staffing problems. The question was asked of a professor of nutrition science and policy at the Friedman School of Medicine at Tufts University. How are nutrients in fortified or enriched foods different from nutrients in dietary supplements? Alice H. Lichtenstein, professor of nutrition and science and policy at Tufts, answers, some foods are enriched to replace nutrients lost during processing. An example would be thiamine, niacin, and riboflavin added back to refined grain products. In other cases, foods are fortified with nutrients that tend to be underconsumed. For instance, vitamin D added to fluid milk, iodine to salt, and folic acid to refined grain products. We've run out of time for today's episode of Thought for Food. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Bob Kruger, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time. If you have any questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138, 919-832-5138.